When he regained consciousness, he had to grind his teeth to keep from yelling again. He groaned and sat up, though not without a race of fire up his leg that made the feeble daylight grow almost black. The battle was roaring all around him, but he was in a little corner of inactivity. By him lay the tree-trunk-thick corpse of the Titan who had been about to kill him. The back of his skull, which looked massive enough to resist a battering ram, was caved in. Around the elephantine corpse crawled another casualty on all fours. Seeing him, Burton forgot his pain for a moment. The horribly injured man was Hermann Göring. Both of them had been resurrected at the same spot. There was no time to think about the implications of the coincidence. His pain began to come back. Moreover, Göring started to talk. Not that he looked as if he had much talk left in him or much time left to do it in. Blood covered him, his right eye was gone, the corner of his mouth was ripped back to his ear, one of his hands was smashed flat, a rib was sticking through the skin. How he had managed to stay alive, let alone crawl, was beyond Burton's understanding.
You,
Göring said hoarsely in German, and he collapsed. A fountain poured out of his mouth and over Burton's legs, his eyes glazed. Burton wondered if he would ever know what he had intended to say. Not that it really mattered. He had more vital things to think about. About 10 yards from him, two Titans were standing with their backs to him. Both were breathing hard, apparently resting for a moment before they jumped back into the fight. Then one spoke to the other. There was no doubt about it. The giant was not just uttering cries. He was using a language. Burton didn't understand it, but he knew it was speech. He didn't need the modulated, distinctly syllabic reply of the other to confirm his recognition. So, these were not some type of prehistoric ape, but a species of subhuman men. They must have been unknown to the 20th century science of Earth, since his friend Frigate had described to him all the fossils known in A.D. 2008. He lay down with his back against the fallen giant's gothic ribs and brushed some of the long, reddish, sweaty hairs from his face. He fought nausea and the agony of his foot and the torn muscles of his leg. If he made too much noise, he might attract those two and they would finish the job. But what if they did? With his wounds in a land of such monsters, what chance did he have of surviving? Worse than his agony of foot, almost, was the thought that on his first trip on what he called the Suicide Express, he had reached his goal. He had only an estimated 1 chance in 10 million of arriving at this area, and he might never have made it if he had drowned himself 10,000 times. Yet he had had a fantastically good fortune. It might never occur again, and he was to lose it, and very soon. The sun was moving, half revealed, along the tops of the mountains across the river. This was the place that he had speculated would exist. He had come here, first shot. Now, as his eyesight failed and the pain lessened, he knew that he was dying. The sickness was born from more than the shattered bones in his foot. He must be bleeding inside. He tried to rise once more. He would stand, if only on one foot, and shake his fist at the mocking fates and curse them. He would die with a curse on his lips. Chapter 23. The red wing of dawn was lightly touching his eyes. He rose to his feet knowing that his wounds would be healed and he would be whole again, but not quite believing it. Near him was a grail and a pile of 6 neatly folded towels of various sizes, colors, and thicknesses. 12 feet away, another man, also naked, was rising from the short, bright green grass. Burton's skin grew cold. The blondish hair, broad face, and light blue eyes were those of Hermann Göring. The German looked as surprised as Burton. He spoke slowly, as if coming out of a deep sleep.
"There's something very wrong here."
"Something foul indeed," Burton replied. He knew no more of the pattern of resurrection along the river than any other man. He had never seen a resurrection, but he had had them described to him by those who had. At dawn, just after the sun topped the unclimbable mountains, a shimmering appeared in the air beside a grailstone. In the flicker of a bird's wing, the distortion solidified, and a naked man or woman or child appeared from nowhere on the grass by the bank. Always the indispensable Grail and the towels were by the Lazarus.